I want to be better at money.
Yeah.
Any got some amens there. That's fascinating. How many of you guys would say, just like, let's be honest, how many of you raise your hand if you want to be better at money? Yeah, I mean, most of us would say that, and if you're not saying that, it's just that you're probably not paying attention, and so that's okay, and that might be why someday you'll need to get better at money, but like, we all have a desire, because money is a part of all of our lives, and there's some part of all of us that we just kind of go, like, I wish I was better at it. I wish I understood more about it. I wish I was better at not spending. I wish I was better at not going to Starbucks. I wish I, you know, didn't have a Starbucks fund, but I had a savings fund. You know, like, do they even have those these days? I wish I was better at it. And if you're kind of bad with money, and you know, and you kind of know that you're kind of bad with money, chances are there's part of you that's going like, hey, I don't just want to get better. I need to get better at money. Some of you, you wouldn't call yourself bad, but you wouldn't call yourself great with money either. You're kind of somewhere in the middle, and you're going, yeah, I know there's some areas that I'm good at. There's some areas that I'm bad at, and I'd like to get better in the areas that I'm kind of bad. Like, I want to get better at money. And what's most interesting when you talk to people about money is the people who are oftentimes the best at handling money are the people who most want to get better at handling money in the future. There are people who are like, hey, give me a book. If you got, Dave Ramsey came out with another book, there's another book. I want the new, it's the same Dave Ramsey book, but with a different cover. I need it. You know, like, and so, like, we just kind of get that way, that when you pay attention to something, you want to get better at it. And so for all of us, we have this desire where we'd say, like, money's a part of our lives. It's a part of every one of our lives. Every one of us will handle money, and we'll have some a little bit, a lot of it, a whole lot across our lives. And all of us, I think, would say, I want to handle it well. And if I'm not handling it well, I want to get better at handling it. Now, because we're a few weeks away from a holiday called Halloween, and maybe you haven't been scared in a while, I want to share with you today some scary, I would say, downright terrifying statistics about what's normal when it comes to money in our culture. And some of you might think, like, this sounds intense and extreme. You can Google fact check every single one of these stats. This is current reality in 2019. I almost said 2018 because I forgot what year it is. But some of the statistics are from last year. Some of them are from this year. But here's the average statistics about finances across our country. The average U.S. household that has at least one type of debt averages, can you guys say averages? Averages $144,100 in debt. So if a household has at least one type of debt, even if they just have a mortgage, but most people have a mortgage and a car loan and credit cards and more credit cards and a Kohl's thing and a Home Depot thing and all kinds of stuff, the average debt for a household is $144,100 in 2018. The average American household credit card debt equals a $5,700 balance. That's the average amount on a credit card in a household. For households that don't pay off their balance every month, the average balance is $9,333. Some of you are like, that's not that bad. Like, you know, so you're like, yeah, you're the part that, like, breaks the average. And some of you are like, oh, I can't even imagine having that. You're the part that's not in that number, okay? $9,333 is the balance on the credit card. The average credit card debt for New Mexicans. Anyone want to guess where New Mexico ranks on most or least using of credit cards debt? We are the worst. We have the highest credit card balance in the country. At $8,300 is the average credit card debt for a New Mexico household. That's the average. I didn't look up the indebted, you know, the, like, if we don't pay off the balance. If the average in the nation is $5,700, the average in New Mexico is $8,300. And because I was homeschooled and I'm good at math, that's $2,600 more than the national average. For families that make the median income of $60,000 per year in New Mexico, that would take over a year to pay off, and you would end up paying $1,000 just in interest. That's crazy. In America, in the last 5 years, people who are buying a new or used or terrible condition car, people who are taking out loans to buy a car, for the total number of purchases, 92% of the total purchases took out a loan to pay for the car. Which means if you're buying a new car, used car, lightly used car, you're used and returned, drove it off, or a used and it's just a beater car replacing your last beater car, 92% of people are taking out loans to pay for those cars. Which means the second you drive it off, you owe more than it's worth. It's crazy. So 92% of us are doing that. 58% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. Some of you are thinking, are we supposed to have more than that? I don't know. We'll talk about that. 90% of married couples fight regularly about money. All the married couples are like, no, don't look at each other right now. Don't look at each other right now. Don't look at each other. Like, don't, you don't look at me. I won't look at you. We won't make eye contact. We'll just pretend he didn't say that. We'll pretend we didn't have a fight about money on the way here today. We'll just pretend that everything is good. Like 95% of couples fight regularly about money. If you want to retire at 65 and you want to have annual spending of $65,000, which is kind of what they say is like comfortable. I think that's high, but if you want to have like comfortable annual spending of $65,000 when you retire, you will need $1.6 million saved for retirement. Thinking, that's easy, you know, that's easy. But the problem that's happening is the average retirement savings for people at age 55 is $124,831, meaning in the next 10 years of those people's lives, they will have to save $1.476 million, or more than most of us will make in a lifetime. Isn't that fun? What a little fun, sad, terrifying statistic about retirement. 69% of students from the graduating college class of 2018, 69% of students took out student loans, graduating with an average debt of $30,000. Anybody on pace for that? You're like, yeah, that's me. That's my reality. Yeah, I mean, like I graduated in college in 2005, and I graduated with $11,000 of student loan debt, and I thought, I don't know, this is so much. How am I ever going to pay this off? And then I read that statistic, and I was like, I don't feel so bad anymore, because 30 is $19,000 more than my $11,000. I was like, okay, that's not that bad. And I paid it off in 4 years, and it was fine. But like that's crazy. It means before you get your first job, before you step into your career, before you buy a house, before you have kids, before you buy a car, before you do all of that stuff, you're already saddled with $30,000 of debt is the average college student graduating. Isn't life exciting? And so here's the thing. For all of those reasons, If you're paying attention to those statistics, those are terrifying numbers. Those are terrifying numbers, and that's what normal looks like in our culture, in our country, in our state, and normal is terrifying, and I would say that normal is killing us. And so if any of those or if multiple of those are true of you and your experience and your kind of financial situation, you shouldn't just want to get better at money. You need to get better at money. And so for the next couple weeks, I want to talk about this idea, how do we actually get better at money? Because here's the truth, and here's the tension for all of us. All of us want to be better at money, but very few of us work to be better at money. All of us want to be better at money, very few of us work to get better at money, and those are two very different things. And that's not to say that you're not hardworking, we all are hardworking, but there's a difference between being willing to work hard to make more money and working hard to handle our money better. Does that make sense? There's a difference between being willing to work hard to make more of it and working hard in how we handle it to make sure that we handle it better. And that's where the tension comes. Most of us think that the only way to get better at money is to make more of it and get more of it. We think, well, I'll be better at money when I have more of it. I'll build an emergency fund once I get that raise. We'll save for a house down payment once we each get that promotion that we're hoping we'll get. I'll make more than minimum payments on my debt someday when I make more money. We'll give to churches and to charities and to people and to kids doing fundraisers. We'll give to that stuff once we make more money. I'll save for retirement when I make more money. Interestingly enough, if you think that for long enough, you actually don't have to worry about retirement savings because you'll never be able to retire. It's just this thing that like we all think that someday when I have more, I'll get better at it. But what's true is having more of it doesn't make us better at it. What's interesting is that when you look at the statistics, having more money does not make you better at handling money. It means you're better at making money, but not necessarily better at handling money. Statistically speaking, the more people have, the more people spend. In other words, we kind of think about like, oh, well, you know what? People all spend the same, and so some people make more and some people make less, but spending is all kind of the same. No. The more people make, the more people spend. People don't make more and go, ah, we will live within our means and we'll have extra. They go, ah, we can afford more stuff. And so they spend more. Statistically speaking, people that make more money have more debt. They buy more expensive houses, drive more expensive cars, lease more expensive cars, have more credit card debt because they're spending more on a consistent basis. And statistically speaking, people who make more money give less of their money. And so making more money does not necessarily make you better at handling money, which tells us this, that on some level, being better at money has very little to do with the amount that you have, but with how you decide to handle whatever you have. And so for the next couple weeks, what I want to do is I want to talk about three virtues that I see when I look at Scripture about that should lead us to some healthy things when it comes to our finances, that should actually make us not just better at making money, but should make us better at handling whatever money we have. And so if we have a little, we'll be better with handling a little. If we have some, we'll be better at handling some. If we have a little more than some, we'll be a little better at handling a little more than some. And if we have a lot, we'll be better at handling a lot. Because being better at money is all about how we handle what we've been given. And so today, what I want to do is I want to talk about the first one of these virtues. And it's a word that's going to get everyone just so excited in this room. I can't wait for you to hear this word because you're going to be like, oh man, I've been waiting for Chris to talk about this. This is so exciting. This is like you're just going to go, wow. Like you're going to be blown away. You're going to have a big smile on your face when I say this word. Are you guys ready to hear the word? That's terrible. All that set up to get, yes. You guys ready to hear the word?
Yeah.
Discipline. Yeah. All the smiles are like, oh. Discipline. None of us like to hear the word discipline. None of us really like to even think about discipline. We don't like to think about anyone disciplining us. We don't like to think about discipline, like having to make difficult choices. We don't like to think that like someday we'll have to say no to things in order to say yes to, like we don't really like that idea. But all of us at some point along the way, we have disciplined ourselves in one way or another, and we've been disciplined by someone else. And the way that we're going to talk about discipline is not discipline that's forced on you by someone else, but discipline that we decide for ourselves because we want something in, we want to do something that's important. And so here's the big deal when it comes to discipline, when it comes to our finances. You will handle money either by default or by discipline. You will. We all do it. We all handle money either by default or by discipline. Default is all of the stuff that we talked about. It's debt. It's behind on payments. It's behind on savings and retirement. It's unable to be generous here and now because we're paying off the past. That's what's default. And most of us, we default to what we saw when we were growing up, or we default to what's happening around us, what our friends are doing. The matter of fact, they say over if you study people over the course of 10 years, people will make on average about the same as what their five best friends will make, which is fascinating. You're like, I need to meet some rich people so I can become friends with them so I can make more money. Is that what you're saying? Maybe it's what I'm saying. I don't know. But they say that we make about the same, we spend about the same, we eat about the same, we lose weight and gain weight the same as the closest people around us. So we generally default to what the people around us are doing. And so the way this plays out when you're young is, and when you're, you know, in your 30s, when you're in 40s, this is just the way it plays out. Think of the last time that you were at the end of the month and someone had a birthday and it was like, hey, we're going to go out somewhere nice. And you're like, sweet, we should go out somewhere nice. And then you looked at your bank account and you thought, ooh, I can't afford nice. I can barely afford ramen. But you knew you had a credit card in your back pocket. And so your bank account couldn't afford it, but you thought future you could afford it. And that was a problem that future you would have to deal with. And so you just put it on the card. That's what we do by default. We go with what the people around us are doing because that's what we do. But discipline will make you better at handling money. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28, written by King Solomon, one of the wisest men who ever lived. He said this, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. He said, if you look at a city and the walls are cracked and the walls are broken and they can't defend themselves, that's because they lack self-control. When you look at someone's life and it looks like it's cracked and it's broken and they can't defend themselves and they can't keep themselves safe, it's actually because they lack self-control too. I mean, there are things that happen across the course of the life that wreck us, that do things. But Solomon says, looking at a life, looking across the spectrum of time, when I see people who are broken and they're gone through terrible things and they can't defend themselves and their life is cracking and crumbling, he's like, when I see most of those people, most of them, they just lack self-control. And so what Solomon is describing is what we see across our country right now. We've all gone by default in the way we handle money, and we've all ended up in debt, and we've all ended up with not enough in savings, and we all ended up with not enough retirement, because we can't, and so we're not able to plan for our future, we're not able to provide for our future, we're not able to defend ourselves and keep ourselves safe in the future. He says, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. But then Solomon also wrote this. In Proverbs chapter 23, verse 12, he said, apply yourself to discipline. Apply yourself to discipline, meaning this is something you can learn. This isn't something that some people get naturally and other people will never get. This is something you can learn. He says, apply yourself to discipline and listen to words of knowledge. And then in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul wrote a letter to a young man named Titus who was pastoring a church, and he gave some instructions on how he was supposed to teach different groups of people within the church and different things he was supposed to emphasize with each of these groups of people in the church. Now, there's four different types of people that Paul references in this thing, and there's one thing that's in common about all of them. He says this in Titus chapter 2, starting in verse 2, he says, older men are to be self-controlled. Now, do we have any older men in here? Just raise your hand if you're an older men. Some of you got some gray hair and you're like, I'm fighting it. I'm not raising my hand. I don't know what you consider old, but old is a year past me. That's how old is. He says, older men are to be self-controlled, worthy of respect, sensible, and sound in faith, love, and endurance. This week I was back with my family in Wisconsin for my grandpa's funeral, and I have a 6-year-old nephew named Seth, and he's my sister's son. And Seth looked at me and said, Uncle Chris, are you older or younger than my mom? And I said, well, Seth, let me tell you how this works. In age and in years, I am older than your mom. But in spirit and enthusiasm, I am much younger than her. And then my sister said, yeah, but I have far more wisdom than he has. And Seth looked there, and you could see this, like, these wheels turning, and he goes, yeah, I'm going to go with spirit and enthusiasm. And I was like, good boy, Seth, here's your $5. To Seth, to this 6-year-old kid, I'm an older man, and so I need to be practicing self-control. I need to be worthy of respect, sensible, sound in faith, love, and endurance. He says, in the same way, would you guys say same way?
Same way.
Yeah, in the same way, older women, do we have any older women here? Yeah, okay, hey, you're willing to admit it too, that's great. I was told I shouldn't even ask that question because you never ask a woman her age. Anyway, so in the same way, he says, older women are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not slaves to excessive drinking. So in the same way, older men are to be self-controlled, and in the same way, older women are to be self-controlled. They're to teach what is good so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands and to love their children, to be self-controlled. Now, do we have any younger women here? Yeah, yeah. You're like, I don't know what young is, but I'm young, I'm hip, I'm cool, I'm jive. Anyway, so it says the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. I just said jive, yeah, and to love their children. And then he says, they're supposed to be self-controlled, pure workers at home, kind and in submission to their husbands, so that God's word will not be slandered. And then he says, in the same way, are you starting to catch on to what Paul might say to every group here? In the same way, encourage the young men to be self-controlled in everything. So older men, what are you supposed to be? Self-controlled. Older women, what are you supposed to be? Self-controlled. Younger women, what are you supposed to be? Self-controlled. Younger men, what are we supposed to be?
Self-controlled.
That at every stage and every age, we're called to be people who are self-controlled or self-disciplined. We're supposed to be people who can look to the future and look to the present and make the right decision, not just the easy decision. And so that's what discipline looks like. It's self-control. We're all called to it, and we're all called to it in all different aspects of life, including our finances. And so financial discipline, what this looks like, when it comes to discipline in our finances, it looks like this. It means you have a plan, you stick with the plan, and you work the plan. Sound good? And here's the thing, that's frustrating, that's difficult for many of us because many of us are really good at having a plan or making a plan. We're bad at sticking with a plan. We're bad at working the plan. Others of us, we're really good at working a plan if we had one, but we're terrible at coming up with one. And so if you have zero, if you have one, if you have two of those aspects, there's room for you to grow in your discipline when it comes to your finances. And so here's the reason financial discipline is so important when it comes to bad at money, okay at money, really good at money. Here's why financial discipline is so important. Financial discipline, it will get you out, it will keep you right, and it will set you up, okay? And I want to talk about those three things for the next 10 minutes today. I want to talk about get you out. Would you guys say get you out?
Get you out.
Get you out. We're talking about get you out. And when I talk about that, we're talking about getting out of debt. That financial discipline, if you will learn the value of financial discipline, if you are in debt, financial discipline can lead you out of debt. And some of you are thinking, wait a second. How will discipline get me out of debt? I got into debt because I'm not disciplined in my finances. And here's the thing. We say that and we think that because we think discipline is a thing that some people got it and other people don't. But I believe this is something that we can all learn. I believe that you got yourself into debt because you weren't being disciplined, but you can get yourself out by choosing discipline. And so Proverbs chapter 22, verse 7, it says this, the rich, this is a verse that if you've ever read Dave Ramsey, like people who love Dave Ramsey, they get like wall stencils of this verse. It says, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is a slave to the lender. That if you're in debt, Proverbs says, Solomon says, that you're in slavery. And when you're in debt, you are a slave. You might be a really well-dressed one. You might be a slave driving around in a really nice car. You might be the envy of your neighborhood. You might be a slave that other slaves wish they had your house, but you are a slave because as good as you look in those clothes and as good as you look driving that car and as fancy as your house is and as nice as your countertops are, you at some point along the way have to figure out how to pay that stuff off. And as long as you're having to spend mental energy trying to figure out how to pay that stuff off, you are in some forms in slavery. You lack sleep. You lack peace. You and your husband, you and your wife, you and your kids, you fight about money because there's not enough because you're paying off things that you bought 3 years ago. And so you're in slavery. And if you're wondering what discipline that gets you out looks like, here's what it looks like. At some point along the way, you have to decide to live on less so that you can pay off debt. You have to live on less so that you can pay off debt. See, we get into debt because we have, here's what we make. This is 100%. This is 100% of my finances. This is 100% of what I will make in a year. And unfortunately, most of us live at 110% of what we make in a year or 120% of what we make in a year. And if you've been doing that for long enough, this becomes pretty big. And at some point along the way, if you're going to pay that off, you will have to make the decision that you're either going to make a lot more money or that you are going to live on less so that you can take that extra and put it towards your debt. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's what discipline looks like, that you're going to live on less so that you can pay off debt. The other option is here is to get a side hustle. So you donate plasma, or you make things and sell them online, or you decide that you're going to be an Uber driver two nights a week so that you can make some extra so you can start putting it towards your debt. But at some point along the way, you will have to make the decision, here's what I have, and I'm going to live on less than that. And when you make more, if you decide that you're going to do a side hustle, you do the side hustle not so that you can raise your level of living, but so you can raise your level of paying off debt. And if you decide to do this, when you get disciplined, here's two things, and they're already on screen, two things that I think are great things to do. Number one is to create an emergency fund. This is Dave Ramsey's baby step number one. It's to create an emergency fund. And the emergency fund is simply this. It's like, okay, we're trying to pay off debt, and while we're trying to pay off debt, it would be a really terrible thing if we added to our debt. And so if the car breaks down, if the car needs brakes, if the furnace goes out, if the air conditioner goes out, I mean, in New Mexico, you can go out with a furnace most of the time, but you can't go without air conditioning in the summer. And so it's like, okay, if that goes out, we got to pay for it, and we got to pay for it quickly. And if you don't have the emergency fund, where does that money come from? The credit card. And it becomes more debt. And more debt. And so baby step number one is to establish an emergency fund so that while you're paying off debt, if something else were to creep up, you don't have to go into more debt to pay for that thing. So we create an emergency fund. This should be one of those as fast as possible things. And the more people you have in your family and the more stuff that you own, the larger the fund should be. For some of you, you're single and you have a car that, you know, the brakes would cost $300, the tires would cost $300. You might need $600 in your emergency fund. For some of you with kids, you know, there's medical bills, there's furnaces, there's air conditioners, and some of those things get bigger and bigger and bigger. If the washer goes out, if the dryer goes out, those things get more and more expensive every year. And so your fund may need to be larger, but whatever the fund looks like, you need to figure out what's our emergency fund going to be and start funding that, start building that. The second thing is to work what Dave Ramsey calls the debt snowball. And the debt snowball means you pick the smallest balance that you have in your debt and you pay that, you put extra toward that, extra toward that, extra towards that. In 3 months, maybe you've knocked that out. Then you take that payment and you add it to the next lowest payment. And now you got a little bit bigger snowball and you're working this thing that's rolling downhill and it's becoming a bigger, bigger, bigger thing. And in 4 months, you've wiped that out. And then you apply that payment and the first payment to the next one. Is this making sense? And so you're paying paying more, paying the same amount, but you're putting it towards one thing and attacking it and getting it out of the way. And the snowball keeps rolling and rolling and rolling, get bigger and bigger until someday you are debt free. And the reason to do this, a lot of people, there's different ways that you can choose to pay off debt. The reason I think this one is so good is it's an excellent motivator. When you have paid off the first debt, you get really excited to then pay off the second. And when you paid off the second, you're like, ooh, I've got some motivation. I got some momentum. Let's attack this third one. Let's attack the fourth one. Let's sell more stuff. Let's sell you, honey. Let's keep paying off these debts. I mean, you know, like, we can always have more children, but we can't always pay off this. You know, I'm just kidding. You know, so like, probably. Anyway, so you create an emergency fund, you work the debt snowball. You could choose to put either one of those in either order. I'm a pretty big advocate of having the emergency fund first, just so you don't end up the frustration of, well, we paid this off, but then we caught this. We paid this off, then we caught, like, you don't end up with the rubber band effect. So being disciplined, it will eventually get you out. The second thing that being disciplined will do, it'll keep you right. Would you guys say keep you right? It'll get you out and it'll keep you right. Luke chapter 14, verse 28, Jesus talking says this, "For which of you wanting to build a tower doesn't first sit down and calculate the cost?" Would you guys say calculate the cost? He says, "For which of you wanting to build a tower doesn't first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it?" And Jesus, after this, that what Jesus says is really funny because it's Jesus, and we think Jesus is like really nice. And what Jesus says after this, he says like, and when you see someone who didn't calculate the cost, you laugh and you point and you say, that guy didn't calculate the cost. He doesn't have enough to finish his work. What a silly, foolish man. We're like, Jesus is kind of mean. Jesus is kind of judgmental. Just like we all are when it's somebody else's finances, right? And so he says, look, when you're sitting down, when you have a goal, when you have something you're trying to accomplish, like you sit down and you try to figure out like, hey, can we afford this? And what Jesus is ultimately talking about, he's talking about the things that keep us right, the things that keep us from going into debt or the things that keep us from starting a project that we would have to go into debt for, the things that we don't have the money for. And what ultimately, the value here when it comes to the discipline of keeping you right, it's the value of living on a budget. You live on a budget. You live on a budget. And you can't live on a budget that you haven't created. You can't live on a budget that's a whole bunch of good intentions. You can't live on a budget that's a whole bunch of like, well, here's what generally stuff costs, I think. You can't do that. And so there's a few things that are true about a really good budget. The first is that a good budget is honest, not hopeful. A good budget is honest, not hopeful. It's here's how much I will make, not how much I wish I made. Some of us, we budget based on how much we wish we made. And we all wish we make more than we do make. You make $40,000 a year, you're like, I wish I made 50. And if you budget based on 50, but you only make 40, you end up in a really weird financial situation. And you can have a plan, but it was a terrible plan. A good budget is honest. It's here's how much I will make, not how much I wish I made. It's here's how much food costs. It's here's how much gas costs. It's here's, we're going to take this trip, and in 3 months, here's how much that trip is going to cost. It's creating a budget for here's how much life costs. I remember when Jalen and I got married, we were in our first year, we were terrible with money, and I'll tell you the story about that in a couple weeks. We're just terrible, terrible at handling money. We made too much of it at too young of an age, and we were just stupid. And so anyway, we just ate out all the time. And so we had like our budget, and we had our grocery budget and our eating out budget, and we were always like exceeding our eating out budget, but we never adjusted our eating in budget. And so we were buying all of this food to eat at home and not eating it, and it was going bad, and it was getting freezer burn, and we were throwing it away, and then we were eating out too much. And so what we figured out eventually is like, hey, let's just be honest about how much we're going to eat out, and let's adjust how much groceries we buy. Let's be honest. We're not going to eat in as much as we should, but let's not let that wreck our financial picture. And so at some point along the way, a good budget just has to be honest about reality. For our schedule at that point in our lives, eating in on more than three nights a week was just not going to happen. And so we just had to figure out and go, hey, based on reality, let's be honest about where we are. This is just what we need to do. And so we eventually figured out how to plan for that. So here's the thing. A budget, it works like the rumble strip on the side of the road. When you butt up against the limits of your budget on the rumble strip, you get brrr, brrr. When you veer off over the white line, brrr, brrr. You get that. You start to drift to sleep and you cross. Brrr. And it wakes you up back to reality. And it's far better that you hit the rumble strip on the side of the road and correct yourself back to getting in the lane than for you to keep going past the rumble strip and end up in a ditch, right? Budgeting is like the rumble strip in your marriage. Budgeting is like the rumble strip. If you want to figure out how to not fight about money in your marriage, you stick in the lanes of the budget. You don't cross the rumble strip and ignore the rumble strip and just keep spending. You live within the budget. So it's a good budget is honest, not hopeful. And the second thing that will make Jalen laugh when she hears this on the podcast or she's in the room right now, a good budget is visible. See, in my opinion, and my problem is I lived too long as a single guy. And when you're a single guy, you can have a budget and it can be in your head, and you can have everything decided, and it doesn't need to be seen by anyone else because it's in your head and you're dedicated and you're steadfast and you're faithful. And blah, 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 I'm going to make this work. The problem is when you have it in your head and you get married and you don't share a head anymore and you don't let them know and you don't have it on paper, you can't be on the same page when there's no page, right? It has to be visible. It has to be seen. Until it's written out and everyone can see it, it's intentions but not a plan. It's intentions but not a plan. So you make the budget, you sit down, you put it on paper. You say, here's our limit for this spending. Here's our limit for this spending. Here's what we're going to save. Here's what we're going to give. Here's how we're going to live on. Here's what we're going to pay off on debt. Here's where this money is going. You tell your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And so the value that I would encourage in the way we do it is we approach our budget from what we call a zero-based budget, where before the money has come in, by the time the check hits our account, when it's direct deposited into our account, we already have accounted for every dollar of that. So here's how much is going to savings. Here's how much is going to the church. Here's how much is going to missions. Here's what we have to pay off of the little bit of debt that we have. Here's the little bit, and here's where our mortgage is, and here's where our light bills are, and all that. It's all accounted for. So that at the end of it, you would say zero, and you'd think, oh man, that means they have no money. No, it means we've just already decided where it's all going to go throughout the next couple weeks until we get paid again. It's a zero-based budget. Every dollar is accounted and it's planned for ahead of time. So getting discipline, it'll get you out, it'll keep you right, and finally, it will set you up. Would you guys say set you up?
Set you up.
Set you up. It'll set you up. Proverbs chapter 21, Solomon writing in, he says this, the plans of the diligent certainly lead to profit, but anyone who is reckless certainly becomes poor. The plans of the diligent certainly lead to profit, but anyone who is reckless certainly becomes poor. Where if you'll get disciplined with your finances, if you get to the point where, like, hey, we've paid off our debt. We got disciplined and we paid off our debt. And then we got disciplined to say, we're going to live on our budget. We're going to live within our means. We're not going to live at 120%. We're going to still live actually at 70% so that we can save and so that we can give and so that we can do some things about for our future. At this point, it's no longer about paying off something from the past, and it's no longer about just about how you live now. Now it becomes about saving for the future and planning for the future and preparing for the future and building for the future. And so as you build for the future, here's a couple baby steps. Again, all of this comes from Dave Ramsey as well. I think there's some really good principles that Dave has. And so a couple milestones to think towards is to save 1 month's expenses. And some of you don't know what 1 month's expenses are right now because you don't have a budget. And so you've got to have the budget piece in order to plan for how will I know when I've reached 1 month's expenses. Here's what 1 month's expenses look like. If you lost your job, could you still pay your rent or pay your mortgage, pay a car payment if you have one, pay your electric bill, pay your water bill, pay your gas bill, keep the lights on, keep eating, have food, have clean water, clean food? Could you do that? And if not, you don't have 1 month of expenses saved. And that's okay. That's a baby step. It's a step that a lot of people haven't had. And Dave Ramsey calls this a baby step. This is not a baby. This is a leap. Okay? But I think this is worth getting towards, because let's be honest, there will be a time in most of our lives where you're going to go a month without work. Just because of how we change jobs, how some of us were going to get laid off at different points along the way without any choice of our own, it's just going to happen. So we need to have those barriers in place so that disaster doesn't hit when those things hit. The next milestone is to save 3 to 6 months of expenses. In other words, if you were to be without work, if you were to have an injury, or if you were to be laid off and couldn't find work for 3 to 6 months, Can you pay for the house? Can you pay for the rent? Can you keep the water on? Can you keep the gas on? Can you keep food on the table? Can you do all of those things? So what is that number? And for all of us, that's a different number because housing costs are different, food costs are different, the amount of mouths to feed are different. But you've got to know, what would it look like if that were to happen? Because it could happen. What does 3 to 6 months expenses look like? After that, we build for retirement savings. We build for retirement. We look to the future. We look to the age of 60 or the age of 65 or the age of 70 or however long it is you think it's going to be when you get to retirement age. and you start to plan for what is it going to look like for me to not work but be able to live. And so we build with a goal in mind. And then finally, we save for personal goals. We save for someday the kids are going to need braces. Someday I want to I want my kids to go to college and not have to worry about where the money's going to come from. Someday I want us to take a trip. Someday I want us to take a trip overseas, and that's expensive. Someday we're going to have to buy a new washer or dryer. Someday we're going to have to replace the brakes on the car. Someday we're going to have to X, Y, Z. Someday we're going to want to buy a new car. Someday we may want to have a down payment on a house. One of the things that, again, I'll tell you about this in a couple weeks. When I was single and bought my first house in Alamogordo, I decided I wanted to buy a house with no savings, which is a terrible thing to do. And I had a deadline. There was a deadline. It was in 2010 where there was like that tax break thing that happened. And I decided I wanted to buy a house because of the tax break, because I wanted to buy a house so that I could get $8,000, which is a bad return on investment. Anyway, so I bought a house so I could get $8,000, because that was smart for some reason. Anyway, so I decided I was going to buy a house, and I had like virtually nothing in savings. And I went, okay, how do you buy a house without any savings? I'm going to need a down payment, right? And my realtor said, yeah, you're going to need a down payment. I was like, okay. And I got 3 months. That's the deadline? Yeah, that's the deadline. Okay. So if you have a personal goal of someday buying a house, how do you someday get there without having to scrape and claw for 3 months to figure out how you're going to get a down payment together? How do we do that? It's a personal goal. And so here's the thing on all of this. When we talk about discipline, I just want to let you know as we finish out today, discipline for the sake of discipline is really, really dumb. Like, none of you today should feel like, man, I'm going to get disciplined with my money so Chris will know that I'm disciplined. If there's any thought of that in your mind, first of all, that's dumb, okay? Like, my approval doesn't matter at all about your financial life. But here's the thing. Discipline with a goal in mind is a really worthy goal, is a really smart idea. Discipline when it comes to paying off debt. I mean, if you're in debt, the weight that's on your shoulders right now, you're like, man, just imagine waking up one day in 2 years or 3 years and not having that weight on your shoulders anymore. Just imagine that feeling of like, hey, I do not have to pay for the past anymore. I don't have to worry about paying off stuff that I've already used and is already gone anymore. That weight off your shoulders, that's worth getting disciplined for. The freedom in the here and now of when you're living intentionally, when you're living with a budget, when you're not exceeding your means, when you're not exceeding your income, when you're saying like, this is what I make, this is what I'm going to spend. So I may have to say no to some things so I can say yes to the most important things, but I'm just going to simply live with freedom, and I'm going to live with peace, and I'm going to live with peace of mind because I know I'm living on a budget, I'm being disciplined. That's worth being disciplined for. And the ideas of saving for the things that matter most in the future. Think of the things that could, like, that someday your kid could graduate and they don't have to worry about where the money's going to come from to go to school. That's worth getting disciplined for. The thought of like, someday I'm going to retire and I don't want my kids to have to worry about who's going to take care of mom and who's going to take care of dad because they didn't do any preparation for it. That's worth getting disciplined for. That someday you want to take a trip to celebrate your 10th anniversary or your 20th anniversary, and you know that trip that you want to take, it costs a lot because you want to go to Australia or you want to go to Hawaii. And I think if you're celebrating 20 years of marriage, I think that's worth it. But that only happens, and it's only worth it if you're disciplined to save for it. It's worth it for the goals that are worth paying attention to, that matter the most, to provide for your family, to provide for your future. It matters to get disciplined. Because at the end of the day, if we get disciplined, we get good at money. We get better at money. If we get disciplined at money, money can be one of those things that can provide great joy. And that's one of the things that we're going to start talking about next week. So let me pray for you.